It's the Troopany Show with your host, James Troopany.
Hello and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany. This is my show, and today we are looking at Sakura Genesis, New Japan Pro Wrestling's card from Rigoku Sumo Hall in Japan. And to join me today is Mr. Marcus Green of Total Wrestling Magazine. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week for pro wrestling. It's New Orleans, Louisiana all week. Wrestling started on Wednesday. There's been nothing but shows all week. This is wrestling heaven. We don't get anything close to this until we get to the G1 Climax in the summer. So next week we'll be looking at some of those shows, but we're going to go back in time to last Sunday to Sakura Genesis. What was your overall thinking on the show there, Marcus? Going into it, what were you expecting?
Expecting some solid stuff, as you can always with anything New Japan related, even coming off a huge show like Strong Style Evolved. They always, even when it doesn't feel like they can, they always seem to be able to keep the momentum. So this show, another solid show overall. Also, I think best part got saved for the latter half of the show, as you would hope. But overall, I thought another solid show. You know, I love everything with Sakura Genesis, the graphics and everything, and it was a really good follow up to Strong Style.
It was. It's been an interesting week for New Japan Pro Wrestling as far as, like, their months, I should say, as far as their production's concerned. You know, they've got so much going on at the moment with the various shows they're trying to do around the world. I mean, even this week, New Japan guys were at WrestleCon. There was a big tag match involving the Golden Lovers versus Sexy Chucky T and Flip Gordon. There was other matches as well involving New Japan. Tana was over. So was Juice Robinson. There was all of the crew were here. We're there in New Orleans, Louisiana. You're in Louisiana. How's the feeling in the state at the moment as far as wrestling's concerned?
It's really cool. It's really cool. Specifically, you know, just all the news coverage of it all, you know, just the sheer fanfare WWE brings along with WrestleMania. And I think that kind of translates to the weekend overall with WrestleCon. So good business all around, and definitely going to be huge for the city. So, as somebody who had to sit back and watch everything that transpired, obviously when, you know, it got devastated the way it did by Hurricane Katrina, just to see, you know, how, you know, things have come along since then, and how, you know, business is seemingly booming, you know, having WrestleMania there again. It's really cool to see as a fan and as somebody who lives, you know, kind of in that area.
Well, we'll get back to the WrestleMania hoopla next week. But for now, we'll stick back to Sakura Genesis, and hopefully you'll be on next week's show. We can talk about it a bit more in depth.
Yep.
Okay, then first matchup was the Young Bucks, Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson. They defeated Bullet Club, Chase Owens, and Yujiro Takahashi. This was a match full of shenanigans, as you'd expect from two Bullet Club teams. This was a follow-up to the Golden Lovers match. You know, me and Alex were talking about it last week when we was previewing this show, and we were saying that obviously the Bucks have got to get their win back. But it just shows how useful Yujiro Takahashi and Chase Owens are. They really told a story in this match. The match started off with, you know, trying to shake hands, be friends, then eventually Yujiro and Chase would jump them. Because we're Bullet Club and you can't trust us. Even our friends, you can't trust us. And that's how the story of the match was told. What did you think of this, Marcus?
I mean, yeah, I mean, 100% agree with you. But just, God bless the Bucks, man. Like, just, you know, these are just probably matches they just shouldn't be doing, but you know, these guys are a first-rate top talent, 100% all the way. But just coming off that Strong Style Evolved match, like this was really the week to kind of sit down. Specifically, you know, with poor Matt, man, he's going through it, going all the way back, and then beautifully telling that story, going all the way back to freaking Wrestle Kingdom back in January.
Yeah,
In April now, damn, it's gonna be in May. Really, the way time flies, and you know, they're still telling that story, and you know, again, beautifully told in that Strong Style of All match was probably one of my favorite matches of the year. But yeah, just telling that story, and with the back of it all, and them just, these guys just have no quit, they have no stoppage about them. To say that they're fathers and to have this schedule bouncing back and forth between the States and Japan and just keeping at the level that they are is nothing short of amazing. So for them to be able to do what they're doing at the level they're going, to continue telling this story, and to be able to get their win back, of course, with the submission, which would tear at your back doing it at the same time, it's just, it's incredible. And to be able to do it again this match also kind of told a continuing split that's going on within the Bullet Club, which is kind of overall arcing story between these two shows. So, you know, it's really cool to be able to kick off the show and not a really long match, but it did what it was supposed to do.
And also, I mean, it's like they protected Yujiro and Chase as well, you know.
Yeah.
They did lose to the Bucks finisher, but Chase teased the package pile driver, which is his surefire finisher. He's beat people with it before and he couldn't get it on. So, you know, they gave each other breathing room. They got each other over. Such a beautifully well-told story, like you said, but everybody maintains their place on where they should be on the card.
Exactly. And shout out to the commentary. I don't know if it was Kelly or
Callis.
It's funny. I'm like, this is the same dude I'm seeing working with Impact. Yeah. So, I have to always remind myself. But yeah, shout out to Callis. You know, and we talk about this all the time. On several shows we've mentioned talking about Owens. Somebody that's kind of been, understated, but never undervalued when it's come to Bullet Club.
Yeah,
just talking about his importance. You know, he's a key player, although it doesn't always seem like it. When you get him in situations like this, it becomes evident, specifically in this match, just how good he is, and kind of, you know, chomping at the bit to kind of just wait to have that big moment. And just, you know, again, you know, who can got to give a shout out to the Tokyo Pimp and Peter Rabbit. So
I really, really want Chase Owens to get a push now. Like,
yeah,
he's so popular since he was tagging with Ibushi during the New Japan Cup tour, and as Chelsea called him, the golden side chick. He's just brilliant. I love the guy, and I've loved the guy's wrestling for a long time now, and I'm so glad he's getting the moment to shine, but I want them to do more with him. Anyway, yeah. We move on to Chaos. Tomohiro Ishii and Taro Yano, they defeated Suzuki Gun, Taichi and Takahashi Iizuka, 7 minutes and 42 seconds in a perfectly serviceable wrestling match. Taichi and Iizuka cheated a lot, and Ishii and Yano pulled out the win. This was just an old school wrestling match. It was boo the heels, cheer the faces, and you definitely knew who the faces were. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Same straight up and down, and it's thankful that we got such a early Suzuki Gun loss in this match. I mean, in this card, because it kind of showed a different story as we went on later. But yeah, straight up and down, you know, like I said, one of the most odd couple pairings ever, Ishii and Yano. But when they get together in the ring, it just clicks. And against, you know, Suzuki Gun, the wretched Tai Chi and Takahashi, Takashi.
It says a lot
what they can do when you can come overcome them cheating odds and put it down. As we've seen with Yano, there's not much he can't do. So, you know, like I said, it was cool to see Suzuki gonna take a L early.
Yeah, I mean, Iizuka doesn't do much, but he is really old. Like, one of the first New Japan cards we reviewed on the Beginner's Guide to Japan in 1992, he was on that. 26 years ago. You know, I mean, so was Hiroshi Tenzan as well. But, you know, they're still there. They're still plugging away. And they're very, very useful people to have around in these particular situations. So, yeah, 7 minutes 42 seconds. Did what it said on the tin. Next match was for the six-man NEVER Open Weight Tag Team Championships. 11 minutes and 20 seconds. Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga, and Tangaloa successfully defend against Tsuyuchi Japan on this particular occasion. Michael Elgin, Togi Makabe, and Raisuke Taguchi. This was a lot of fun for what it was. I just genuinely enjoy watching Bad Luck Fale and Gorillas of Destiny throw people about for 10 minutes. I could watch that. That's fun. It's entertaining to me. I'm not sure it's entertaining to everybody else, but there is a bigger story here, but we'll talk about their challenges in a minute. What did you think of this match, Marcus?
100% agree with you. I mean, three stars alive for me in this match. Never get tired of seeing the Gorillas of Destiny, you know, do their thing, specifically with Bad Luck, you know, backing them. I think that's a great trio. Two, never get tired of seeing the NEVER Open Weight six-man tag successfully. And three, Mike Elgin took an L. So, you know, this was, like I said, 3 for 3 in this match for me.
And they must be waiting on Elgin's contract to run out, because he's not very popular and, you know, he's a fairly horrible person. But they must be kind of like waiting, because he's not done anything and he's certainly like on a big losing streak at the moment. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, no, it was a fun match. Now, the next challengers at the next major pay-per-view for New Japan Pro Wrestling will be the Young Bucks and Cody and they will be challenging Gorillas of Destiny and Bad Luck Fale for the Never Openweight Six-Man Championships. So that will be interesting.
Oh, man. This is like a like New Japan's version of a Jerry Springer episode with this Bullet Club stuff. Right? It really is, because obviously we're going to get to it later on in the show, but this, to me, is kind of one-sided, because the chemistry, to me, is completely on one side.
Yeah,
like it almost comes off as a handicap match when you just talk about the sheer strife of it all. So,
yeah, handicap towards Bad Luck Fale and Gorillas of Destiny, of course, because
yeah,
they're the cool ones. Yeah. Okay, we move on then to match five already. Oh, no, we're on match four. Let's try that again. Taguchi Japan. Well, it's not Taguchi Japan, because Ryosuke Taguchi's already wrestled. This is a Wikipedia thing. I didn't get off Cage Match today. I got the listing off Wikipedia, and Wikipedia do this bit wrong. Anyway.
That's funny, because I'm looking at Cage Match.
Yeah. Tanahashi, Juice Robinson. Sorry, let's go that again. Let's do it properly. Hiroshi Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, and Dave Finlay defeat Hiroki Goto, Jay White, and Yoshihashi. Chaos, 9 minutes and 18 seconds. This was a phenomenally good match. It was fun and it was crisp, and it really shows up why David Finlay and Juice Robinson are getting the title shots at the minute. Hiroshi Tanahashi will get a title shot soon. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. But what do you think of this particular matchup, Marcus, and how does it lay things out for the Never Open Way and for the Intercontinental Championships down the sorry, the US Championships down the line?
Thoroughly fun. You got Dave, another guy who, a lot like Chase Owens, a guy who kind of flies under the radar in such a unique way, but when he gets in certain situations, he can absolutely shine and where in the hell has this guy been? But essentially he's been around the entire time, so Tanahashi's always gonna be involved in something. And my main man Juice, going against Goto, another favorite of mine, Jay White and Yoshihashi. It was a fun, like you said, it was a hell of a time. 9 minutes 18 seconds. And we got Juice going after Goto.
Yep.
Goto, so that's two favorites of mine colliding. That's gonna be fun. And Finlay going against White, who is coming off of Strong Style Evolved, definitely making a contender for herself to be somebody who just doesn't like, again, continuing that storyline of just not liking defeating opponents, but kind of almost putting them in the hospital. So, thankfully Hangman has He's built from some tough stock. This was a fun, like you said, a great match and a great preview. It's going to be interesting seeing, again, Goto is somebody he's more than battle tested in this company with everything he's done to just get that open weight championship back. So this going to be a great test to see the continued maturation of Juice in this company.
Yeah, it's interesting for me David Finlay hasn't done an awful lot, and the strongest angle he's had was attacking Jay White at Strong Style Evolved. He demolished Jay White and cut a promo over him. That says to me an awful lot, but equally, he's getting the championship shot at Kurikan Hall on a Road 2 show, not the big event. So that mean that he's likely to take the title and drop it, and then Jay White get it back from him later on? This is a tricky one. I'm not sure really what's going to happen, but they also have to spread these championship defenses out because they've got so many titles now. This is the problem of having a loaded card with lots of different titles.
Yeah, they and kudos again to New Japan being able to keep all their titles feeling relevant, especially when you have like multiple tags and then of course multiple singles. They doing about as good of a job as you can of keeping everything, keeping all those balls in the air. Eventually something does have to give, but when it comes to New Japan, it doesn't necessarily just fall all the way through the floor like we've seen with other companies. So that of course has to do with the talent and the continuous stories that they can tell from just years at a time continuously. But it's gonna be interesting seeing what they do. Like you said with Dave, kind of like you said, like a second tier show, is like, is that telegraphing he's going to win, or is that telegraphing he's going to outright lose? So
It's interesting to see how they're going to play that one out. The next match on the card was match 5, this time definitely match 5. That featured Suzuki Gun, Minoru Suzuki and Killer Elite Squad, Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Archer. They defeated Los Ignorables de Japón, Tetsuya Naito, Evil and Sanada, 11 minutes and 24 seconds. Now this is setting up a story between Minoru Suzuki and Tetsuya Naito, the two leaders of these particular factions. Naito didn't want anything to do with Suzuki. his eye is on the prize, and the prize is Kazuchika Okada. It's somewhere down the line, and he's got to figure out his route back there again. Suzuki is just someone who's in his way. Obviously, Minoru Suzuki is not going to feel like that because he's Minoru Suzuki. Marcus, what were your feelings on this match and this angle that's developing between Los Ignorables and Suzuki-Gun?
This is one of the key interesting points for me coming off this show, specifically because it's just, like you said, it's Naito colliding with Suzuki, this Suzuki, he can have beef with everybody at any given time or everybody on just one show, depending on how he's feeling that day. So, you know, for him to kind of collide with Naito, I mean, that's definitely a contrast of styles. Like you said, Naito can go against anybody, but, I mean, who wants Suzuki as a problem? So, of course, he would avoid him. But, you know, with him, like I said, like you said, keeping his eye, trying to get back to Okada. But Suzuki, you know, I mean, he'll have a title, but he don't really logistically give a damn. He'll just go after whatever he wants to at the time. So if he picked Naito out, that road back to that world championship just got a lot harder. So get the ice packs ready. You know, it's going to be real fun. Obviously, David Boy Smith and Lance Archer have their eyes on Evil and Sonata, kind of. But for that match, since it got put on, what, a later show?
Yeah, it's going to happen the next show, I think, because Evil only just got back from injury, so.
Yeah, so that's going to be a fun one. But yeah, you know, just continue, because normally you kind of see it'll be Chaos versus, you know, we talk about Chaos versus Suzuki-Gun and or Chaos versus LIJ, but to see these two kind of collide is definitely interesting.
It was interesting, at the press conference after the show, Suzuki actually said, Los Ignorables is just for kids, we're the real deal, which is telling and an interesting way of selling this. You know, he's too popular for his own good, he's supposed to be a badass. This is something Minoru Suzuki does all the time. Like he said last year, the when he won the Never Open Weight Championship, how much he despised the belt because it was called Never. You know, originally it was set up as a championship for the young wrestlers in the company to do something. And he said, you call it Never? Like they're never going to get there? You know, what a useless idea for a title. And he's right. You know, it was a bad idea and badly named title. It sounds cool in Japanglish, but it doesn't sound particularly good when you think about it in that direction. And Minoru Suzuki has a way of making you think about things which makes you reevaluate your life very quickly.
Yes, Suzuki, man, he's just an entity all his own. And when you kind of think about it, like, because Suzuki-Gun was still kind of going on even when he wasn't there, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. To give you the potted history of Suzuki-Gun, okay, Suzuki-Gun was originally Kojima-Gun, Satoshi Kojima's faction. And when Minoru Suzuki signed from New Japan Pro Wrestling, Taichi and Takemichi Noku turned on Kojima, and he turned face, and Suzuki took over. So when Suzuki left for Noah, Suzuki-Gun went with him. They were exiled for more or less 2 years. Noah had a killer feud with Minoru Suzuki and Naomichi Marufuji. Though Noah fans didn't particularly like it, and towards the end of that run, it stopped drawing because it was too oppressive. You know, there was belief that there was never any hope of anyone but from Suzuki would win the championship, so it tended to turn people off, which actually probably started the downward spiral that Noah are in today, though they are starting to recover from that, though it's taken them for about a year to 18 months to recover from what has been going on with Noah lately. You know, injecting some talent from Impact Wrestling helped no end, and they're a company that's kind of back on the up again. They had a good show at Kurikan last week, and they're starting to do tickets, but they slipped down the rankings. They were third or fourth behind DDT and Dragon Gate and New Japan, and All Japan, actually, until recently.
Thank you for giving me that quick history, because what I was trying to get to was, like, you know, him saying that obviously they stepped back into, you know, as a full-on faction in recent years. And him making that statement, like, LIJ's for kids, he's basically saying, like, while we weren't there, you kids kind of basically tried to step up to our shadow. You didn't reach our shadow, but you stepped into it and did your little thing. But now we're here, and now we're going to sun you and put you in your place. So.
Exactly, yeah. This is about, you think you're a badass? Well, I've been a badass for a long, long time.
Yeah, I put the B in badass.
Okay, then we move on to another Suzuki Gun victory, which was El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemura. They successfully defended their IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships in 12 minutes and 45 seconds against Bushi and Hiromu Takahashi of LIJ and Rapingi 3K, Sho and Yo, who could not get the titles back. This was a perfectly serviceable match, but again, I'm kind of like stuck on the three-way dances. Why are we doing this? You could make six cards out of this with these three teams. Why are we doing this now? It was all right. It wasn't my favorite. It was kind of forgettable, which, considering the talent in this match, is ridiculous. So, yeah. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Was it just me, or did this match feel like it was shorter than what it actually was?
Yeah. 12 minutes and 45 seconds, and it went by very, very quickly because there wasn't an awful lot to remember.
Yeah, it was weird too, and now just looking, you know, against, you know, Suzuki Gun versus LIJ, it almost kind of feels like, and not to crap on Roppongi 3K, like, but you could have took him out this match.
Yeah,
and it would have been almost better, and kind of again, added fuel to that fire, because it really was Suzuki Gun's tactics against Bushi and, you know, Hiromu's tenacity, because. You know, Hiromu just kind of went on a tear, and then you know obviously Roppongi and then was there, and then you had the hilarious moment of Romero running like a scolded dog, but essentially that to me was the story of the match. Roppongi was there, but they was just kind of, you know, on the side, but it was Suzuki Gun's tactics versus LIJ, and of course Suzuki Gun took full advantage of those triple threat rules and again took away with the win. That's why I said it was kind of refreshing to see them take a L so early on in the show, because it was a completely different story at the back end of the card. But I just kind of like to see this Suzuki Gun LIJ thing continue, and maybe have Roppongi try to regroup, because obviously they had a hell of a hot start, ran into the Bucks, and then now they're kind of going through their ups and downs. But to me, this is a Suzuki Gun LIJ thing that they kind of need to squash, and a match given more time to kind of flesh stuff out.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. If you had a two-team match, I mean, if you look back at Roppongi Vice and Red Dragon about 2 years ago at the same card, which had a bit of a fluff ending, because I think Red Shoes fluffed the ending. It all ended a bit funny, but that match was a lot better than this one was, you know, because you had a clear story between the two teams and what was going on. This is starting to get messy.
Yeah, it is, and I think we kind of saw something similar to this, I guess, a while back, because it was a continuous thing of what it was. It was G.O.D.
Killer Elite Squad and War Machine.
Yeah,
last summer.
Similar stuff.
Yeah. Me and Alex talked about that last week. It was a couple of weeks ago, actually, and we were like, why? You've got three teams. Spread it out. Make some moves with this, you know. Don't just do the same thing over and over again. It doesn't... I trust Jeddo implicitly with his booking decisions, but sometimes it just doesn't click. Nothing's perfect. We can't like say any wrestling promotion is perfect, but this is the only thing that kind of really like bugs us, I think, everyone at the Troopany show.
It's kind of weird when, you know, it's up in the air a lot of times that the six-man never open weights can be, that it seems that they're kind of more fleshed out than the regular tags are at this point.
Yeah. Okay, then. We move on to match 7. Which was for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Will Ospreay successfully defends against his lifelong nemesis, Marty the Villain Skrull. 30 minutes and 44 seconds of a match that kind of started out slowly, but built to a crescendo. There was a lot of stuff, I think possibly because I've seen these guys wrestle so much before, that I could have done without. But generally, this match was really, really good. It was really well put together. It was much better pace than I expected it to be. Will Ospreay at the moment is starting to creak a little bit. He's got injuries all over the place. He turned up for the I think it was the Progress shows this week, or it may have been one of the WWN shows this week, and he was covered in tape. He was basically being held together with elastoplasts. So this match has taken its toll on him. But when you're the champion, you have to do the matches, and this is another example of Will putting in the effort to try and make his main event run count this time round. What did you think of this, Marcus?
I thoroughly enjoyed this match. This was probably, you know, definitely one of my favorite matches of this whole little stretch. Definitely, it could be for me just because, and I think a lot of it has to do with I haven't seen a lot of the matches these two have had. Kind of feels like a match of the year candidate for me just because of, you know, the things that kind of took me through. Obviously, I've been a huge I'm a huge Scroll fan. But with Scroll, and it's just the contrast with these two for me personally, like I'm more akin to the style of Ospreay, the hero aspect, superhero aspect of it all, that kind of lucha, you know, cruiserweight aerial style. But I've always kind of likened myself and gravitated more towards the character of Scroll as opposed to Ospreay. So seeing these, obviously these two styles collide, that's always fun. But this was one match that I can honestly say, kind of watching Ospreay through his kind of maturations, he's kind of cocky off screen too. Like a lot, he kind of says a lot of slick stuff. But this was really just the things that he went through in this match. Obviously there's a lot of story elements coming into this match. Death Taxes and Skrull beats Ospreay. And we've gotten that since he's come back to Japan and really gotten himself involved into the division. So obviously, Skrull, like you said, he's running on fumes, seems like, at this point, but he's really trying to prove himself to be the face of this division. And I think all said and done, by the time we got to the end of this match, just because of the contrast in styles, how Skrull took his, he was like a surgeon the way he approached Ospreay, really targeting that neck. Like some real nasty bumps Ospreay took in this match.
Yeah.
It was real bad. Specifically, I think it was on that damn Spanish fly off the apron. That was sick on so many levels. But I think I can honestly say that of all the times I've seen Ospreay through his battles with Ricochet and everything, he honestly made me a fan of his, you know, coming off this match. And it was even more interesting seeing the crowd who was so kind of, at the beginning, so involved in Skrull and the whoop whoop of it all, and we all know the taunt, but they were really pulling for Ospreay by the time they got to the end of this match, like chanting for Ospreay even more so than they were for Skrull. So, you know, I thought it was a really wonderfully told story. Him not being able to just hit that one Os cutter, obviously he did, but you know, Skrull really put him to the test, and just like telling that story, he was obviously able to finally vanquish that demon. But I think Ospreay, somebody you can honestly kind of take for granted just because he's that high fly, and really can captivate you with that style. But I think now having people gravitate towards him is having these kind of matches, because it's easy to like, okay, he's going to do a bunch of flips and stuff, but what, yeah, you know, where's his heart at? And that's what you got to see in this match. So I thought it was a great thing, and it just seeing the overall story with the match, and getting to the end, like I said, I think I'm, you know, really, he earned a fan here in this match. Now, obviously, where he's going next with it, you know, I'm a fan, but I'm never going to be rooting against the man, the person who kind of almost defines this division, in Kushida. But it was a hell of a match, man. Hell of a match. And really exciting to see where this goes. But hopefully, like the Bucks, he can at least get a couple days off, because this is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, this is... Will was fantastic in this particular matchup. I know we've kind of ragged on him for being inconsistent in the last 12 months, but this was one where he was really, really on. And you're right, Kushida is the next challenger for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Can the one true ace get things back on track? He's been out the title picture for a while, since Wrestle Kingdom. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. Let's get crazy one more time.
Yeah, the two dudes who kind of had to come, you know, battle, they really had to overcome their demons. First, you know, obviously Kushida with the
Hiromu.
The time bomb that is Takahashi. And then Ospreay now with Skrull. So seeing these two guys collide, you know, the face of the division and the guy who's trying to become the face. It's like I said, nobody tells these stories, you know, consistently and ties them in, no matter the stretch of period of time, better than New Japan. So,
yep. It's worked really, really well with this division at the moment. There's so much going on with it, and it's back and hot again, as it always manages to be, one way or another.
Yep.
Okay, then we get to the semi-main event, the match 8, which was Bullet Club versus the Golden Lovers. Cody and Hangman Page pull out a victory against one of the greatest tag teams in the world today, 23 minutes and 52 seconds, and this was all about Cody and his relationship with Kenny and his relationship with Kota. Now, there was a couple of things I wasn't happy with. Certainly, Cody talking about rats and talking to Callis about being a rat king. I think we can retire that word now, Cody. It's not very nice, and people don't like it, so please don't. But other than that, This match was very, very good. This match did tell an incredible story. Now, it wasn't up there with match quality as far as Golden Lovers and the Young Bucks were, but as an emotional draining story, it doesn't really get much better than this. Marcus, did you hold back the tears?
I think I was kind of teared out from Strong Style. but this was very much within the aftermath of that, specifically because, and I think, again, just having that element of the Bucks just come out.
Yeah.
Not get too heavily involved, but just having them two come out. Who, by the way, you would think these guys would barely be walking now, specifically Matt. But like I said, God bless the Bucks. Those guys are made of some different stuff. But just having those guys come out, and just for me, tying back so many elements, going back to that, to the obviously the epic trilogy of Kenny and versus Okada, just, you know, the support of the Bucks, and, you know, just the overall Arkansas, specifically that second match where you had Cody trying to throw in a towel and the Bucks like, you know, sit back, he has this, let him do this. Just tying back those stories, and like you said, the relationship of Cody, Omega, and Ibushi, because going back to Strong Style, that whole thing was like really Cody's relationship with the Bucks, and Ibushi like, I don't give a damn about these two. It's like, I care about you, and let's get this match done. Put these two down so we can get out of here. And obviously, Kenny, like, these are my boys, these are my brothers. This is not easy for me, even if, you know, like I said, we are the Golden Lovers. So with this match, and another great thing too, Hangman, you can't leave him out. Hangman, unlike the Bucks, was readily at Cody's, supporting Cody when this all went down. There was no question of what side he was on because of everything that kind of like, and they told a backstory on commentary, Kenny kind of knocking him out of the spotlight with the U.S. strap, so he was already pissed about that. Then I guess he kind of looks at Cody too as a guy who asserts himself, takes moments, and puts himself in position like Hangman is starting to do now, so he kind of relates more to Cody. So you got that split, and obviously with the Bucks, and obviously everything with Kenny and Cody is going to meet ahead at the Super Show with Ring of Honor. So it was just a lot of elements in there, and then you had the whole thing of the sheer effortless tandem work of the Golden Lovers versus the tactical strategy of Cody and Hangman, because they work well together, but they are nowhere near Kenny and Kota. So they basically had to break them up at points, and like they did here, the best way to do that is to cut one off, and we got that with Kenny, and then kind of target Ibushi. So it was a lot of great story elements that converged and kind of led to that climax. And how great was it to have Cody literally squeak out with a win to up his a-hole factor even more?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's the story. You know, this is about oppression. Cody's the master manipulator. He's going to manipulate everybody into the position he wants them in. You know, even that story is being told in the match. The Golden Lovers couldn't get the X-Slash off. They kept missing it because Cody kept moving things, taking pieces of the puzzle out of the way. But we did get to see it in the end. We didn't get to see it against the Bucks. We do get to see it again. But even then, there's another layer. They wanted to finish off Hangman Page with the Golden Shower. They couldn't do that. So that's another layer. There's something else that they can save for another night. They don't have to do everything at once. This is smart wrestling. They're not taking as many risks because they're doing it all through emotion. This is possibly the easiest thing Coach Ibushi has managed to line up for himself in the last 3 years, considering the bumps he normally takes. And he doesn't have to do half the work. But they are getting this over, and the fans in Japan and the fans in North America, they're reading it slightly differently because they're being told slightly different stories, but the basic principle is the same. The Bullet Club's in trouble. Who's going to save it? Who's going to be the savior? My money's still on Tama Tonga, but this is going to be the story to tell.
Yeah, I love that, because Tama's just, he's like steel face at this point. Like, he's specifically when Kota was trying to, I don't know if it was at the last show or the one before that, when he was just on the mic, and then you just saw him and Tom and Loa just standing there like, really, bro? Like, come on. Like, Tom was just not having any of it. So I hope, like you said, he is the saving grace, because Cody may prove to be like the strongest cancer this club has ever seen. We've seen so many people come in and out, and obviously they literally get kicked out, but Cody is just a different storm, because he keeps adding on layers of stuff. and Strife, and then he's pulling guys, like I said, like Heyman to the side. So, you know, this linchpin has to be removed, you know, like we've never seen before with the other guys that they've kicked out. Because even when Adam was in there, he never really felt like a part of the club to me.
No.
He kind of just felt like somebody who was there just because, you know, of just kind of who he is. And, you know, he never really kind of fit to me. But Cody is just a completely different monster. So it's going to be interesting seeing how they exercise that demon.
Yeah, I've got a feeling. I said this last week, and I'm going to repeat it again, because I've got a feeling it's going to end up with the Bucks and the Golden Lovers on one side. It's going to end up with the OG Tongans on the other side, and Cody is going to have to feel the wrath of both. And then it'll be two sweets all round, and Brandy has to take him off the mat with a spatula. That's what I'm looking for.
And who's suffering the most of all this? Poor Squirrel in his hair.
Yes.
Poor Squirrel in his hair. He's becoming the villain hag because of all
By the way, if you like our stories about Bullet Club, Golden Lovers of the Young Bucks, and all of these things, I floated a conspiracy theory about 12 months ago involving all of these characters and how it was going to play out. And I basically said that Ibushi's WWE run was a conspiracy cooked up between Kenny, Kota, and Gedo to get him over in front of a different audience and to drag New Japan towards the Golden Lovers. I explain it all in the blogger post that I did this week. If you look up Trooping Show Blogger, one of the people who is a big Golden Lovers historian, a lady called Effing Boring, you can find her on Twitter, she found out about her theory. Now, a couple of months ago, she wrote an entire history of the Golden Lovers in Twitter form, and then it was posted it. Kenny Omega found it, and he kind of populated it, and it got like 5,000 retweets and likes. And she found out about the Troopany conspiracy, as it got called, that we kind of all contributed to. And so she did a commentary on her blog on Tumblr. So you can find about all that. If you look through our Twitter feed, you can find all the stories. And if you look us up on Blogger, there's a story explaining the Troopany conspiracy and how I thought it worked.
it's so good. So many elements to play with coming out this thing. And it never gets boring. Like our group chats are never boring.
No, not ever boring. Never, ever boring. Like last week when Miko Satomura won the Fight Club Pro Championship, Sai was there. He was telling us, giving his running commentary. There's me and Chelsea marking out by text going, yeah! So, yeah, it's never boring. One day we should publish all those just as a booklet.
Exactly.
Okay, then we move to the main event of the evening. Kazuchika Okada defends the IWGP Heavyweight Championship against the reigning New Japan Cup champion, Zack Sabre Jr. of Suzuki Gun. It was chaos, and the Rainmaker successfully defends for the 11th time, equaling Hiroshi Tanahashi's all-time run record of 11 title defenses in one reign, in what arguably is the greatest heavyweight championship reign of all time. We're talking Misawa, Kobashi, Aja Kong, Manami Toyota, this kind of level of greatness. And this was another absolutely stunning match that was based around Okada trying to beat Sabre Jr. at his own game and managing pretty damn well in the first half of the match. And then he kicks it into high gear and becomes the Rainmaker and takes it home. Marcus, your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah. Everything you said about Okada's reign, the quote Eli Drake, that is just a fact of life. period. I think, like I said before, I think Ospreay and Skrull was my favorite match of the night, just because of the sheer story that it elevated to. Like you said, that crescendo, and the way it started from to that crescendo at the end was incredible. But this was equally as good, just for a completely different reason, like you said, because just watching this match, Okada came into this very confidently. And you wouldn't expect that from somebody, specifically after seeing what he, Sabre, and we talked about this, he tore through the New Japan Cup.
Yeah.
Absolutely just ripped through it. And meaning rip in every sense of the word, if you've seen, you know, submissions he put these poor suckers through. But, Okada, he really, what I like, obviously, Okada, saying Okada is battle tested is like saying, you know, a turtle is slow. We know that. but you know, but he really came into this confidently, and that went to a completely different level after the match. We'll get to that later. He really, in the first half of this match, made Sabre, unlike some guys on New Japan Cup, he made Sabre wrestle his match.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to do, because like I said before, greatest compliment I can give Zach, even when you're unleashing the onslaught of offense, you're constantly on defense with this guy. So coming into this match, I felt like Okada did a lot of homework. Like I said, obviously his pain threshold is through the roof at this point, but he really was prepared for those submissions in a way, because you can never really fully prepare for Zach, because you just can't comprehend, even if you can comprehend all the submissions he can get you in, you can't comprehend just where he can get you in them from. Like, one of the best spots in this match was Okada hitting the Rainmaker, the Rainmaker taunt, and freaking Zach popping up like a viper submission, and Gato's face like, oh shit. It was just, he grabbed his head like, oh god, we're gonna lose, aren't we? So yeah, it was really good. And like you said, Okada had it in the first going, but again, like a freshly sharpened axe to you know, some timber wood, he just kept chopping away at it. And it literally took a symphony, it felt like, of Rainmakers to put Zach away. But it was a great match, and you know, for Okada, you know, to reach that record and tie it is incredible. Not taking away anything from Zach, but Okada, like Gato said, is just on a completely different level. So you know, that was cool. And of course, you know, everything in the post match, I didn't think, because I've never seen Okada this cocky before. Maybe I'm just new to this, but he really at this point is on his own hype train, needs nobody else on it, even Gato. Like, it felt like Gato left the building when Okada got on the mic. Of course, that was preceded by the great appearance of the great Hiroshi Tanahashi, who is the only man in pro wrestling who can cut his hair and probably look even better. Amazing. Like, that swoop is incredible. But not to go off into another diatribe about his hair, because any longtime fans of the show know how we can get here. But yeah, to tell that story of, you know, like I said, Okada is on a completely different level now, both as a competitor, but also in his confidence. So for him to brush away the ace like that, brush him aside and say what he said, which I'll let you get off into. But this is the same guy, because in my mind, I'm like, this is the same guy that sent you to the locker room years ago crying like a little kid. And you now brushing him aside, that really tells the story of, like, all these reigns, but now all these wins he's racked up against these impossible odds, and now he's like, this once mountain that I couldn't even conceive of climbing is like an anthill to me.
Yeah.
So that's incredible.
I mean, I have seen him this cocky before. When he first came back from Impact Wrestling in 2012, and he challenged Tanahashi, and everyone said, oh, he can't do this, and he beats Tanahashi first time out. That was when he was this cocky before. But this story has been, like, you know, it started against Tanahashi when he drops the title to Tanahashi, like you said, at Wrestle Kingdom 9, and he leaves the building in tears. He can't quite do it yet. He isn't good enough to beat the ace. Now he's facing up against him again, and this time, he's the boss. He's the ace. He's the man in charge. He has beaten everyone they have put in front of him. Minoru Suzuki, Naomichi Marufuji, Bad Luck Fale, Tetsuya Naito, Kenny Omega. He's done it all. He's beaten everybody. There is nobody left, so he has to start again. And, yeah, he runs through Zack Sabre Jr. in a cracking match, but it was very, very close. And then he has the confidence to say, okay, Tanahashi, it'll be fine. You can challenge. I don't care. You know, and that's an awful big statement to say. Now, Tanahashi's the right guy because it's Tanahashi's record, so he can save his own record if he wins the championship at their next pay-per-view. But is he really going to win the championship? Because, you know, Okada's on the right path. We know they want to make him the ace of aces, otherwise he wouldn't have had this championship run. I'm not sure Tanahashi wins that match, and then there could be the celebration.
Yeah, it's almost inconceivable seeing you know, kind of, you know, take a L at this point. This is gonna be like New Japan's version of the streak with Taker. Like when it happens, we almost need that guy, that Taker guy with the face. should he ever lose? Because you know his reign has been that incredible. But seemingly, if anybody can do it, because I thought they might wrap it around and bring back Kenny to do it, but obviously they're going in a different direction. But Tanahashi would be seemingly the guy, because like I said, he was the guy that, you know, was his initial obstacle, and we know how good Tanahashi is. We know he can elevate. But and I think me, you, and Chelsea talked about this. He's kind of hit a certain ceiling because he's so good. Like, he can't get any, you can't conceive of him getting any better, but he's definitely not going to get any worse. So he's kind of on a certain level, streamlined now. But, you know, and it's funny because Okada, he shat on the man after he left. like he didn't say a word, and he almost looked like he had a completely different face, and then he turned it on once he started talking. He was like, "Oh, Mr. Tanahashi, what the hell have you been doing all this time while I've been basically running through his company?" He was like, "Oh, let's see. You don't have a title. You lost the New Japan Cup Finals. And you're like, yeah, you're just an all-around loser, aren't you?" Like, he was like, dude, you know, like you're basically talking to the Don Dada of New Japan right now. Like, and for him, like I said, for him to display that level of confidence, it just speaks to everything he's been through. And even, you know, bigged up Zach after the fact. He was like, "That was great, but you only made me stronger. Like, you know, there's seemingly no obstacle I can't get over now." So, like, I'm in the corner with you. I mean, obviously, like I said, Tanahashi is just, he's always going to be Tanahashi. He's always going to be that good. But this level that Okada on is unprecedented. And can he really put this kid down? The kid that seemingly was, like I said, the guy that he looked up to, that Okada looked up to, and he even said it in the promo. It was like, "You're not even Mr. Tanahashi to me no more. You're just Tanahashi." Mm-hmm. So I would almost, it would almost kind of be satisfying in a way to see Tanahashi come back and sun him a little bit just for this level of cockiness. But at the same time, it's like Okada could, like, beat him with not little to no effort, but with extremely high effort, and it'd be 100% believable. And it's like, now who the hell is going to beat after this? Like, you almost have to have him, like, come against, like, other promotions at this point. Like, send Pentagon over there, for God's sake. So that's the level he's on. So, you know, like I said, these stories never get old, no matter how many times you tell them, no matter how many times a lot of these guys collide. New Japan always finds a new spin to put on it and makes it just as enjoyable to watch as the first time you watch them locked up.
Yeah, it's going to be phenomenal, because Tanahashi never disappoints when he's wrestling Okada. He's got to be his favorite. You know, he said when Kenny Omega went for 37 minutes, he said, "Well, Kenny must be 10 minutes better than me then." And it was a kind of like, there was a kind of a disappointment in his voice that he couldn't take Okada to 35 minutes. So I think he wants his run with Okada one more time just to make it very, very special. And I think it's probably the last match we'll see between these two for a long time, if we see one ever again. So yeah, it's going to be something really, really good. Alex Watt wanted to remind us, actually, that if you look at the top end of this card, you've got three British wrestlers. You know, Will Ospreay, Marty Scurll, and Zack Sabre Jr., who have done an awful lot. And that says an awful lot about the British wrestling scene and how much it has grown in the last 15 years. That the second biggest wrestling company in the world is relying on British wrestlers, like it used to do back in the 80s and the 70s, to make great matches with their stars. And it shows an awful lot about the growth of the business. I mean, we're looking at NOLA this week, and you've got Progress have gone over there. Fight Club Pro have gone over there. They're running shows in the States as well. You know, this has been really cool for British wrestling, and it's something that is kind of like the investment in time fans and wrestlers and promoters have put into it. It's really starting to pay off now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, 100% everything you said, and, you know, shout out to Alex. Would have definitely been fun to have him on here, but obviously, you know, everybody's busy. Yeah, I mean, 100% Scurll, you know, Ospreay and others, anybody else. I mean, just look at what Pete Dunne's doing in WWE, NXT. I mean, he's probably one of the most, if not the, one of the top heels in the company, in my opinion. And definitely is just, he never fails to put on a cracking match, whether he's going against somebody, attacking with somebody like Strong. And then you come over here and you got, like you said, Skrull and others. You know, the British scene's been hot. You know, we talked about how hot it's been for years now. And it's constantly poking through in every facet, you know, of the business and in different companies, as it should. So, you know, that's only right. It's only going to continue to get better.
Indeed. Right then, that ends our coverage for Secura Genesis today. I'd like to thank my guest, Mr. Marcus Green of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You can find him at Paradox Kid on Twitter. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And you can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter as well. You can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook, The Troopany Show. You can also find us on Patreon. Find us at Troopany Show on Patreon. And if you could bring some money and pledge some money along there, it helps keep the cost of the show moving along, keeping it free forever for everybody. You can also find us on Blogger, where you can find that story about the Troopany conspiracy and other things that I've written from Wrestle Talk and stuff back in the day. Thank you very much. Next week, we will be in New Orleans, Louisiana, to cover as much wrestling that came from the state of Louisiana as it did in this week, and we'll try and give you as many stories as we can. In the meantime, it's Secura Genesis. It's the Rainmaker one more time. Tanahashi to come. See you soon. Bye.